This is Pure Evil, the sentencing of Aiden Fucci. Immerse yourself in the gripping courtroom audio as justice unfolds in the chilling case of Tristan Bailey's murder. Witness the raw emotion, the powerful testimonies, and the unfiltered truth of Pure Evil, the sentencing of Aiden Fucci.
We are up to the final segment in the sentencing of Aiden Fucci, segment number 11. We take you to the courtroom now for the audio.
State Judge County Circuit Court is now in session. The Honorable Judge Smith presiding.
Thank you all. Please be seated. All right, let's go on the record in case 21-CF-825, State of Florida versus Aiden Fucci. Who do I have appearing on behalf of the State of Florida? And on behalf of the defendant?
Rosemary Peoples.
Craig Addit.
And Mr. Fucci is also present. We are here today to conclude the sentencing hearing that began on Tuesday of this week. Before I get started, are there any matters that we need to address at this time from the state?
No.
Anything else from the defense?
No, sir.
I did receive some filings as of yesterday. I did review all of those filings. There were about 200 pages of deposition transcript. I reviewed as much of that as possible. I did look for portions of those depositions that I believe were related to this testimony that was received earlier in the week. So I have reviewed all of those filings that were filed yesterday. Before we begin, there is, I think, one matter that I need to address, and that is Ms. Peoples, as far as the determination, I think that has to be made a factual finding as to whether or not your client actually killed Tristan Bailey. That is typically a finding that would be made by a jury. However, because there was not a jury trial, factual finding could not be made by the jury. And I just want to make sure that there's a stipulation and agreement that the court can make that factual finding based upon the testimony and evidence that was presented during the sentencing hearing. Is that all correct?
That the court is relying on the evidence that's presented in the sentencing hearing.
And
for
yes,
that factual finding.
For the court to make the factual finding. You're waiving your right to have a jury make that factual finding.
Yes, by entering the plea, Your Honor. Yes.
All right. Based on the evidence that was presented during the sentencing hearing, as well as the defendant's plea to the charge of premeditated first-degree murder, the court does find that Aiden Fucci killed Tristan Bailey, which now makes the range of possible sentences for Mr. Fucci a minimum of 4 years in prison up to life in prison. Before I begin to address the statutory factors that the court must consider under 921.1401, let me address the Bailey family as well as the friends who are here today and who have also been here throughout these proceedings. The loss in which you have clearly suffered is unimaginable. The court was certainly moved by the words and the victim impact statements that were presented earlier this week. I have been through these types of proceedings numerous times. Sometimes family members hope or expect that whatever the sentence is, that somehow or another that's going to heal or provide closure. And I just want to warn you that it's not. It's not how it works. No matter what sentence this court imposes today, it cannot heal you. I cannot bring her back. I cannot provide a closure to this. It may close a chapter of this, but it will not close this for you. You still have a lot of healing to do. And I certainly am not going to take the place of any of your counselors or therapists. But my advice to you is simply this. Understand that the healing process takes time, and you have to move through the stages, and you have to allow each other to move through the stages at your own pace. Comfort each other, but understand that some of you may reach different phases of this healing process sooner than others. Your daughter and your sister are obviously, her body is no longer present on this earth. However, her spirit lives on through each and every one of you. From what this court can tell, she was quite a energetic, happy child. Some of you testified to the fact that when you learned of her death, that part of you died as well. And what I would suggest is that you fill that void with her spirit and her life that certainly lives on through each and every one of you. Allow Bailey Sunday Fundays to return to your home. Allow laughter to return to your home, because in depriving yourselves of that, frankly, you're continuing, it would continue to victimize Tristan, because that's not what she would want. She would want that happiness and the laughter to return, and the joking between her siblings, that's what she would truly want. You have to try to let go of some of the anger that you still feel. I think that's a big part of this process for you. Mr. Bailey, I want to address something that you mentioned, and that was the process of these court proceedings. I know it's been a long 22 months for your family as well as for this community. Justice at times can move a little bit slowly for those who are thrust into it. For those of us who practice it and live it and work it every day, I assure you that there are constitutional safeguards that are in place in this country, and they're there for a very important reason. And sometimes that takes time to work through that process. And that can be frustrating, it can be agonizing at times. But we strive to make sure that we get things right the first time and that we do things the proper way. And I appreciated your comments, and I appreciated the patience that your family and the community has shown to the court system. These attorneys have worked diligently. They have had on both sides. They have, this is not their only case, sadly. This is the only courtroom in all of St. John's County with over 300,000 people who now live in this community. We have one felony courtroom. So every felony, every murder, it takes place in this courtroom. And these attorneys are assigned to cases throughout this circuit. I trust and I believe that they have done a diligent job in this case. And again, I recognize that it can certainly take some time, and I appreciate the patience that you've shown, and I hope that you understand the necessity in making sure that things are done the proper way. Pursuant to Section 921.1401, the court, in determining whether a life imprisonment or a term of years equal to life imprisonment is an appropriate sentence, the court must consider the following factors. A, the nature and circumstances of the offense committed by the defendant. B, the effect of the crime on the victim's family and on the community. C, the defendant's age, maturity, intellectual capacity, and mental and emotional health at the time of the offense. D, the defendant's background, including his or her family, home, community, environment. E, the effect, if any, of immaturity, impetuosity, or failure to appreciate the risks and consequences on the defendant's participation in the offense. F, the extent of the defendant's participation in the offense. G, the effect, if any, of familial pressure or peer pressure on the defendant's actions. H, the nature and extent of the defendant's prior criminal history. I, the effect, if any, of characteristics attributable to the defendant's youth on the defendant's judgment. and J, the possibility of rehabilitating the defendant. I have considered all of the evidence that has been presented for the during this week, the testimony that was presented, the victim impact statements, the evidence that was submitted, the filings, and I have analyzed each and every one of those factors as well as any other factors that may be relevant to these proceedings in order to determine an appropriate sentence for this case. The statute requires the court to make specific findings on the record, which is what I will now do. I'm going to begin with factor C, the defendant's age, maturity, intellectual capacity, and mental and emotional health at the time of the offense. This defendant was 14 years old when this act was committed. It is well established, and this court accepts fully that an individual's brain is not fully developed until they reach sometime in their 20s. There is no question to the science behind that. This court recognizes it, accepts it. The court finds that the defendant himself was of average maturity for his age. Based on the testimony that was presented, there were comments about that he was of average maturity, that he some of his friends looked upon him as even more mature than the average 14-year-old. He did have a learning disability. His grades suffered as a result. He struggled in school. Resources were put into place to assist him, which he did respond to. The Dean of Students testified about his work with Mr. Fucci, and that there were some things that were done to assist him. He did have some discipline issues at school, but he had a good rapport with that dean, seemed to have a good plan in place. The court has heard the testimony and received some testimony about his emotional health, which kind of segues into the next factor, which is the defendant's background, including his or her family, home, and community environment. The defendant had a fairly normal home environment. He had two parents who were very involved in his life. The testimony from the grandmother was that he, his father never missed time sharing, his mother never missed time sharing. I want to comment on the grandmother who testified, who came into this courtroom and testified. That took a lot of courage. That was not easy for her, but it did show in this court that he had a good, stable home environment. While there had been some discussion about, from the, I guess, his girlfriend, that she felt as though maybe there were some things that were going on at home, based on all of the testimony and evidence, this court does not find that he suffered from any type of physical or emotional abuse. It does not appear that there was any significant alcohol or drug abuse inside the home. Additionally, the court reviewed the letters that were submitted by his mother and his father, in particular the letter from the father. The court was also moved by, indicated that there was a strong father-son relationship. I'm going to skip factor E for just a moment and move to factor F, the extent of the defendant's participation in this offense. This court does find that the defendant was the sole participant in this offense. He was 100% responsible for this murder. This court does not believe that there was any encouragement or enticement from anyone else to get him to commit this crime. As to factor G, the effect, if any, of familial pressure or peer pressure on the defendant's actions, the court received no evidence that would suggest that there was any familial or peer pressure on the defendant's actions in this case. The nature, factor H, the nature and extent of the defendant's prior criminal history. This defendant has no prior criminal history. The court did receive, and there had been some discussion about whether or not the court could consider any prior or post-bad acts. I want to make it very clear that the only consideration that this court is giving to any of the information that it received related to any prior acts in school or fights or any of the statements or acts that occurred after his arrest while he was incarcerated were received and considered solely for the purpose of analyzing the factors in this statute. It in no way, shape, or form does this court considered those matters in order to enhance his sentence. It is simply to apply them and apply those issues to these particular factors. The effect, if any, of characteristics attributable to the defendant's youth on the defendant's judgment. I've already considered his youth. I don't find that there were any other characteristics of his youth that really played a part in this crime. J, the possibility of rehabilitating the defendant. I would say that the defendant has shown some ability to modify his behavior that was shown in school through the Dean of Students. However, as Dr. Pritchard noted, this crime is extraordinary. His behavior was so unusual compared to individuals his age that there is a poor prognosis for rehabilitation. Let me move to factor B, the effect of the crime on the victim's family and on the community. The effect of this crime that is had on the victim's family and on the community is significant. There is no greater loss than the loss of one's own child. The nature and circumstances of her death have caused an even greater trauma on her loved ones. Her siblings, parents, and extended family members all provided compelling victim impact statements relating their personal struggles with coping with her death. It has caused them deep and emotional and mental health problems. They are no longer able to function as the family they once were. It has also had a tremendous impact and effect on this community. This court has reviewed all of the letters that were submitted by her friends, teachers, coaches, and others. Approximately 150 letters were received. I have read all of them, and all of them strike a similar chord. This was a devastating crime. It was devastating to the children of this community. It materially changed an entire community. Some of the letters indicated and discussed children who were teenage children who could not sleep in their beds alone and had to sleep in between their parents for fear of what happened in this case. One of the letters I read mentioned the exhaustion of any mental health resources. The supply was in such need that the need was so great that the supply of mental health resources, there was an insufficient number of counselors. Individuals had to wait weeks or even months before they could get in to see a grief counselor. I would submit that this case is probably the most difficult and shocking case that this county in St. John's County has dealt with. In the 20 years that I have been, or 16 years that I have been practicing law, and the 30 years that I have lived and worked in this all of Northeast Florida, this case is one of only a very small few that had this level and this type of impact on the community. This court gives this factor great weight. As to the last two remaining factors, the effect, if any, of immaturity, impetuosity, or failure to appreciate the risks and consequences of the defendant's participation in the offense. And the effect of the crime, and the nature and circumstances of the offense committed by the defendant. These factors are somewhat combined. ...114 stab wounds, 49 defensive wounds, 35 wounds to the head and neck, 29 to the back and shoulder, and 6 fatal wounds. This court has reviewed and seen more than its fair share of autopsy photos. The autopsy photos in this particular case were particularly difficult. The 49 defensive wounds indicate that Tristan Bailey was conscious, that she was aware, and that she was doing everything she could to fend off this attack. She suffered a painful, horrifying death from someone that she trusted. Her screams were most likely stifled by her own suffocating lungs. He lured her into a secluded place in the woods near his home, a person that she trusted, and he led her there under false pretenses. There was a heightened level of premeditation in this case. Based on the prior statements that he made to his girlfriend and his friend, he indicated that he was going to kill someone. At which point he determined that it was going to be Tristan Bailey, I don't know. But there was going to be a victim. He indicated that he was going, how he was going to do it, that he would take them into a wooded place, that he would stab them, he would kill them and then run away so that he could keep on killing. He told his best friend that he wanted to kill someone to see what it felt like, and he wanted to watch them bleed out. This particular crime was committed with the weapon of choice as a knife, which he nicknamed Poker. That required a up-close, personal type of murder that is rare. It's unique. The court accepts that in 2019, of all juvenile arrests, only 7% were violent and only 1% of those were homicides. This crime is clearly an outlier, and it was shocking, and it is shocking to the conscience. This court finds that the defendant's participation in this offense was not the result of immaturity or impetuosity. He understood the risks and consequences of his actions. He previously told his girlfriend that he was going to do this. That clearly shows that he had been planning it. He attempted to cover it up by disposing of the murder weapon and throwing it into a lake. He then attempted to conceal evidence by hiding his shoes and shirt and jeans, taking a shower, stealthily entering his home, and then the actions immediately after with the Snapchat videos in the back of the police car and the story that he made up about pushing her and her hitting her head, which was clearly refuted by the video evidence in this case. All of that shows, and this court finds, that this was not an immature or an impetuous type of crime. It makes it unique. It makes it extraordinary. What is also very troubling is that this crime had no motive. This was not done out of greed. It was not done in retaliation, retribution, or revenge. It was not a crime of passion. It was not a crime that was committed because he felt rejected by her. It was not done in a fit of uncontrollable anger. There was no reason. There was no purpose. It was done for no other reason than to satisfy this defendant's internal desire to feel what it was like to kill someone. It was committed in a cold, calculated, and premeditated manner without any pretense for moral or legal justification, and it was heinous, atrocious, and cruel. This factor and this factor alone makes this case and this defendant more than just unique. It is for this reason and all of the reasons previously stated that leads this court to the conclusion that there is only one appropriate sentence in this case. Mr. Fucci, if you and your attorneys would please rise. Counsel, is there any legal reason why this court cannot impose sentence at this time?
No, sir.
Mr. Fucci, having entered a plea of guilty to the crime of first-degree murder, I adjudicate you guilty of the premeditated first-degree murder of Tristan Bailey. I sentence you to life in prison. Because of your age, you are eligible for a review of the sentence in 25 years. I order the Department of Corrections to notify you when you are eligible to apply for your review hearing. Madam Clerk, if you will please impose the minimum fines and court costs. Mr. Fucci, you have 30 days to appeal the legality of this court's sentence. If you wish to appeal but cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed for you. You will be taken back to the Duval County Jail and then transported into the Florida State Prison System. We are adjourned.
That concludes the sentencing of Aiden Fucci and segment number 11. Thank you for listening to this podcast and experiencing the pure evil that lies within those we least suspect. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us.